From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudet, and this is Idaho Matters. Stephen Rowley is the best-selling author of four novels. Now, you may know him for his NPR Best Book of 2019, The Editor, or his novel, The Gunkle, which I must say is one of my favorites. It was a finalist for the Thurber Prize for American Humor and Goodreads finalist for Novel of the Year. Well, he is back with his latest novel, The Celebrants. And as one critic wrote, they said, the big chill, but make it Gen X and at least 30% more gay. We are lucky enough to have Stephen on the program today to talk more. Welcome to Idaho Matters.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm going to give you one little update to the bio that's sort of just happened. I won the Thurber Prize for American Humor, and I'm still like shocked.
Can we just for a minute talk about The Gunkle? Because I kid you not, I adored this book. I loved it so much. I have recommended it to people. I have given it to people. It is, first off, it's funny. It's so funny, but it's lovely. It's heart-wrenching. I mean, oh my goodness. And so to know that it won that, I think is just incredible.
It's also a deep exploration of grief. And so hopefully the book is very funny. But I felt, you know, almost like I should unmask myself when I got on stage to accept that prize, you know, which is a prize for humor, and say, oh, surprise, it's actually a book about grief. But, you know, humor is always the way through. And, you know, that's true of the new book also, which touches on some themes of loss. It's, you know, it's humor that I keep coming back to that has gotten me through the tough times in life.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I mean, because if not, it seems like that grief and that tragedy will suffocate us if we don't find a way to acknowledge it and to move through it. And I felt that reading The Gunkle, but also with the Celebrants as well.
Yeah. So the new novel, The Celebrants, is about a group of college friends from the class of 1995 who lose one of their own to suicide right before graduation. And after attending his funeral and hearing all the incredible things said about him, make a pact in that moment, because they're about to scatter, you know, in all different directions after graduation, that they will reunite at a moment's notice at each of the friends' lowest points in life to throw their funeral while they're still alive to attend it. And hopefully hearing their eulogies, hearing how much they're needed here, will reignite sort of a passion for living. And then, as humor is an important part of what I do, it's the pack starts to go off the rails over the decades.
Oh yeah.
You know, somebody has a destination funeral and then somebody else gets a surprise funeral, but then something happens that I think underscores the original purpose of their unique pact.
Well, and what hit me about this is that this is my generation. I mean, so even picking up the book in the beginning, I mean, it threw me back to when I was graduating college and thinking, how in the world am I ready to be an adult? I don't understand why giving me a college degree makes me think that I'm ready to do this, right? And but then when you fast forward to where they are now, I mean, even in that one of the first scenes when they're using reading glasses, I was laughing because I have reading glasses. I have embraced them because it makes my life so much easier. My husband refuses to wear them, and refuses.
Well, he was like, you know, men are stubborn. What can I say?
Right.
That opening scene, and again, this is not spoiling anything because it's right on the first page, but it was inspired by, you know, a real moment in my life when I was having dinner with my college friends, and one of them pulled out the reading glasses, or somebody else turned on the flashlight on their phone to read the menu. And someone else was like, it's so loud in here. When did restaurants become so loud? And I was like, what happened to you people? You all got old. And, you know, it's because you can't see it on yourself in quite the same way. But I also had this incredible, you know, I was overcome with this sort of feelings of love for them in a way. You know, I almost like this version of ourselves more because we've, you know, we've survived, you know, much. We've endured and we're still there for each other. And that was very meaningful. You know, well, we talked about the big chill a tiny bit. You know, people remember that movie from the early 80s, which was, you know, kind of a jumping off point for me. But they also are, you know, contemplating middle age and what that means. And I rewatched that a couple years ago when I was facing my 50th birthday, and all the characters in that film are 35 years old. And so it really struck me how much we've changed our thoughts about aging and what it means to be sort of middle-aged.
Well, and let's talk about that, because I read that one of the things that did inspire you about this book was the fact that you, when you were turning 50 and that point in midlife. And what struck me about this is, you know, when I was turning 50, you know, my kids are giving me a hard time about things like reading glasses and all that. And I like to say I made it to 50 before I needed them. But with that said, I'm also like, if you're lucky enough to survive long enough, you too are going to need reading glasses. And I know that sounds just silly and trite, but I think there's something in that, right? That as you said, we have gone through so much to get to this version of ourselves. And I think you do such a good job exploring that with these characters in the book.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly true. Growing older is a privilege. And I think of somebody like myself, who is, you know, an out gay writer, too. When I came out 30 years ago, we were losing more people to the AIDS crisis, you know, than even in the 1980s. I had sort of assumed that my, you know, life might not be that long. And in fact, so, you know, it is a true, you know, privilege to age and to grow older. You know, tying it back to The Big Chill for a second, that title referred to what was then that middle period where you're likely to already be married and have kids and own a house, which is something people used to be able to do. And, you know, work for one company maybe until collecting a pension and retirement. But now, you know, those middle years, we're apt to have, you know, perhaps multiple marriages or blended families. Certainly, there's a lot of room for reinvention and changing careers. And certainly, you know, it's very rare to work for one company anymore. And it made me realize how much story there is now in these sort of, you know, middle years.
So I don't want to give anything away in the book, but I do also want to touch on what you have mentioned in regards to what else made you write this book and kind of an event in your life. And that is that you lost a very good friend to breast cancer.
That's correct.
And as you have said, we don't see the exploration of grief or contemporaries when our contemporaries pass away in midlife. Why was that important for you to really dive into that topic in particular?
Yeah, I do think there's something about losing a close contemporary for the first time that forces you to face your own mortality in a way that perhaps you haven't before. And there's also something incredibly important about these long-standing friends, you know, people who knew you before, you know, the pieces of your life were locked into place, and who also knew an adult version of you, you know, when, you know, and knew how your life turned out. And they can be this incredible bridge to gap, you know, to cover the gap between these two slightly, you know, perhaps different versions of yourself. And reconcile them. And so that is, you know, I think that is really important. And these friendships and writers, you know, we write to understand. So I was, you know, perhaps writing this book to work through some of that. But I do think there's going to be a lot of conversation among writers and artists about how we address the past few years, because there has been so much loss. These past few years. And so, you know, you may not have lost a person necessarily, although we did lose many, but we've certainly lost time, you know, and our ability to be together. And so, you know, the idea of writing a book around the theme of telling the people in your life what they mean to you while they're still here. I mean, I absolutely think that's a reaction to the past few years.
You know, what you said about, you know, writing is a way to understand. And when I was reading this book, I lost my older brother when he was 48 and to cancer as well. I've also lost my parents. And the difference in losing a parent versus losing literally someone who has witnessed your life with you as your contemporary and they die in midlife, there is no rhyme or reason to it. And so I think when someone can write about that and you just can question it and it can be okay, is really important for people to have that outlet. And did you think about that, I guess, at all when you were writing? Is that, as you said, we don't talk about this as much. And I remember as soon as my brother passed away, I mean, everyone of course was so sad. And I remember saying, I was like, yeah, he's just left us all here to pick up the pieces. Like, yeah, he's gone. And now we're all devastated. Right. And we don't know how to move through this.
Yeah. You know, I try to look at grief through different lenses too. My first novel was a book called Lily and the Octopus, which is sort of about, you know, losing a dog, you know, a pet, and, you know, animal grief. You know, we have evolved the way we think of animals so much over the past few decades, you know, where now they are full-fledged family members, but we haven't evolved the conversation about how we grieve them when we lose them at the same rate as which we've welcomed them into the family. Here with, you know, a book like The Celebrants, which is dealing with losing a friend, you know, there's no deal with friends, right? Especially at our age. I have friends who are 25 years older. I have friends who are 25 years younger. There's no sort of natural order for when, you know, you can expect to lose a friend. And sometimes it's hard to contextualize these losses for other people. We have all kinds of friends for all kinds of things. Some are as close, or if not closer, than family members, and some are more, you know, more casual acquaintances we just have coffee with. And so, you know, to tell someone that I've lost a friend, you know, they don't always know what that means, or the level or the depth of that grief. And I think that was something I was absolutely exploring with The Celebrants.
Okay.
But again, hopefully very funny.
I was going to say, all right. So here's what's interesting to me is, you know, your novels do have this theme of grief, right?
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, I mean, you are such a funny writer. You have such a quick wit. And it just, I mean, I think in particular, the character of Naomi in the book,
she was a favorite to write.
She had, I mean, I would laugh out loud at the things that would come out of her mouth. And I mean, so when you started writing, did you think that there would be these themes of grief in the novels that you write? Because at the same time, it is filled with such humor, and you're literally winning awards for humor.
Well, humor, you know, it's always going to be a part of my work. It's part of my life. It's how I faced all the challenges, you know, that I've had. It's always been the way through. But, you know, particularly writing a book about a group of friends, what do friends do when they get together? Well, drink one, but then laugh, hopefully. And so, you know, crafting the humor with this book, you know, I think it was more challenging than in books past, because here you have these sort of very lived in, time-worn friendships. And how do you create a common language, a sense of humor, not just for each individual character, but for the friendship group as a whole, inside jokes that don't exclude the reader, and really invite the reader to be a member of this group of friends. It was, you know, sort of working with humor in a different way than I have in previous books.
So with that said, I mean, those inside jokes, one that I loved, which I think you kind of have to be Gen X to really fully appreciate, is, what is it? Are you two Courtney?
The Courtney scale. Courtney Cox, two Courtney Love, or two Courtney Thorne
Courtney
Smith.
Courtney Thorne Smith.
From Melrose Place and Ally McBeal. I don't know.
I loved that. Right. But I love that. I mean, I think too, it's, you know, it is in a way kind of a bit, I felt, of a love story to Gen X and to our coming of age, because I was reading this thinking, okay, if you're 30, you're going to have to Google who Courtney Thorne Smith is. You probably know Courtney Cox because you went back and you binged watched Friends during the pandemic.
On Netflix. Yeah. For years.
Right. Yeah. And I loved that. I mean, so was it important to you as well to kind of, you know, write this homage to Gen X?
Yeah, nostalgia is such an important part of this story. You know, I dip back one last time to The Big Chill. That was, you know, a baby boomer's story. But the other thing that people remember so much about that movie is the soundtrack. You know, it had this incredible soundtrack of their college lives, which was sort of these 60s Motown hits. But now I've created a playlist for each character that are on Spotify, which I loved so much, being able to revisit music from the first half of the 1990s. So if you're in the mood for some 90s hits, you know, you can find that through my Instagram page or search for it on Spotify. But that was fun too. But yeah, there's the pop culture, I think, was so important to our generation. And there was more commonality of culture then, right? You know, we had three networks, mm-hmm. you know, we had some cable, but we didn't have a thousand streaming services. We weren't watching different things on social media or a million videos on TikTok. We were all kind of watching to and listening to the same thing. So pop culture adds to the commonality of language between this friend group, and peppering that throughout the story was some of the most fun things to do with this book.
Mm. Well, I have loved this book. I thank you so much for talking with us today. And I really hope you have another book in the works, because I can't tell you how thrilled I was to find out that you had The Celebrants out. So thank you so much.
There'll always be another book until Good. Artificial intelligence puts us out of business. We'll see.
I hope not. It would never be the same. It has been lovely speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We've been talking with bestselling author Stephen Rowley about his latest novel, The Celebrant. It is out now. I encourage you to go get a copy of it. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.